Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to Unsolved South Carolina, the Murdochs, Murders, Money, and Mystery. We are here today with our exclusive legal analyst, former South Carolina Attorney General Charlie Condon. We have our executive producer for Unsolved South Carolina, Drew Tripp, and myself, Ann Emerson. Thank you for joining us. Today, we're going to be speaking a little bit about where we are with the federal case against Alec Murdoch. Yesterday, to get everyone up to speed, Alec Murdoch came to court. He was shackled. He was accompanied by several armed guards in the federal court to plead guilty. He was changing his plea from not guilty to guilty on 22 counts of financial fraud, theft, money laundering. And when he walked in, he was, you know, my photog, Sam Griswold, who's also taking care of us today behind the camera, we were discussing what color yellow he was wearing because it was a very bright color. And I have to say, Alec Murdoch had a very bright countenance about him as well. He seemed to smile from the moment he got out of his van all the way up to the courtroom throughout the entire proceeding. And it just raised a lot of questions about why this man would be happy about pleading guilty to 22 counts or even just looking pleased mm-hmm. with the whole day. So I want to kick it off with, we are now dealing with the first time, according to Emily Limehouse, who was prosecuting this case for the federal government. She said, this is the first time we've seen Alec Murdoch truly held accountable for his financial crimes.
It's interesting.
I think you could, by the way, I have a lot of respect for her. I think she's a terrific prosecutor. I think in a certain sense, you could say that is correct. However, and I want to focus on the mystery here. The mystery to me is why the federal government in the first place is involved with prosecuting him for financial crimes. You know, step back from this. He's now in state prison. He's been convicted of two consecutive life sentences crimes, these murders. And in state court, they have made it very clear they're going to seek life without parole for three strikes and you're in, for three separate breach of trust with fraudulent intention crimes, the first case of which is set for November. Those cases are really easy to plead to prosecute. He admitted in his murder case, I sat there as he testified under oath that he committed those crimes. He's now pled in federal court, which I guess you say can help that somewhat. But you know, you can only spend one day at a time in prison. And so you've got a defendant now who he's going to have three consecutive life sentences in state court. So the use of federal resources to come in and have a dual prosecution, to me, it's a mystery.
It's a mystery. What do you think, Drew?
To dovetail with that, to piggyback off that a little bit, I don't know that it is so much accountability when you take into mind how much stalling and hand-wringing and kicking and screaming that's gone on to get us to that point, to where we are now with Alec mm-hmm. Murdoch and his attorneys. And it's this total 180, like why are they fighting so hard? We just sat there in a state courtroom in Beaufort County last week where they're fighting tooth and nail to prevent actually going to trial.
Oh, yeah, remember that? They said they were too busy, in effect. They had to pull their calendar out. We can't go to trial in state court. And here they rush over to federal. And, you know, it's got to be, don't you think, prison shopping? They're hoping to get in the federal system.
Yeah, I spoke to a former prosecutor about this yesterday, just on background. He's not involved with the case. Just trying to get my wits about me a little bit. And he seemed pretty confident that's all this is. And the other thing you have to take into context with what's going on with Alec is, okay, first and foremost, his attorney's job is to keep him out of prison. It's to make it immensely hard for the prosecutors, whether they be federal or state, to prove his guilt. Okay, once that ship has sailed, once he's proven guilty and once it's clear that he's going to prison, they then have to minimize that, right? It's their job to minimize that and keep him in prison for as short amount of time as possible. And beyond that, if he's never getting out of prison, which is the clear takeaway on all this, and Emily Limehouse said that yesterday, that's the end goal for everyone, is to make sure that Alec Murdoch is never a free man again. If that's going to be the case, it's Jim and Dick's job to make sure that he's in the best possible living conditions that he can get, I asked someone this, is it really that simple? Is it really as simple as federal prison is so much better than state prison that you would do everything you could to get him in there? And he's told me, yeah, it's that simple.
Why?
A lot more programs. Typically the amenities, shall we say, are better. I've heard reports sometimes that's not necessarily the case, but just generally speaking, a defendant, if he or she has the choice, they almost always choose federal. And so I guess that's why it's such a mystery to me, because if you bring these federal resources in, you know, this is, of course, taxpayer money, right? We're like, okay, let's decide to have a federal investigation, a federal prosecution for Alec Murdoch. He's got two life sentences consecutive in state court. He's facing a third, and it's just not facing it. Those are easy. Those three cases are going to be really easy to prove.
Well, he's already said he did it. I mean, he said, I stole the money.
I know, and I heard them, and he testified in his murder trial. And all the state has to do is put those cases, make sure the lawyers aren't too busy to come to court. They were not too busy the other day to come to federal court. So
not too busy to go to Crime Con.
They're going to Crime Con. They're on their way to Crime Con. Sorry. Did you know that? Dick Harpootlian and Jim Griffin are on their way to Crime Con as we speak.
Now, what is that?
It's like a true crime conference where everybody gets together and you bring in all of the big authors and celebs to talk about different crime cases.
I need to process that a little bit.
We'll give you a minute, Charlie. I didn't mean to throw that to you.
I thought it was something like that you're referencing, but I didn't quite realize that it's exactly that, right? These are literally true crime people.
Absolutely. True crime aficionados from all over the world probably will be showing up to this.
Wow.
One thing that we'll put a pin in that. And maybe we'll have to get back to that, because I have to tell you who was playing last night.
Was it Orlando or Las Vegas?
I think it's Vegas, isn't it? Vegas? I think it's Vegas.
I'm
sure someone will correct me if I'm wrong, but sorry. Creighton Waters was playing last night at Crime Con. I think.
No.
please tell me there's a clip that we can put on our on this podcast of him playing. I didn't listen to the whole thing, but somebody in the newsroom had him playing. So, it's a thing.
We'll put that up on the video version of this for sure.
That's I like to see that.
I think Sam's looking for it now. Yeah. Oh, gosh, sorry. Okay, pin in that one. But before I forget, you know, we did have a chance after this federal hearing, and there's a lot more I'd like to unpack about this federal hearing.
Yeah, the forfeiture is interesting to me.
They struck a deal. I mean, they struck a deal for Alec. So I want to talk about what that deal entailed. But one thing, going back to federal versus state prison time, we very much directly asked Ms. Limehouse, is this a goal of the federal government to get him into a federal prison? Mm. Do you plan on pushing for a federal prison sentence? And she said, you know, absolutely not. No, we have no plans to change where he is. We have no plans to put him into federal custody at all. And I know, of course, things can change. And then I think that's when she kind of followed up or had been talking around the fact that you know, basically that this was an opportunity to make sure that he never got out of prison, wherever he is. He's never getting out. He's always going to be locked up. But it just adds to the mystery, doesn't it? It's like, okay, so you're not even looking to put him in prison. Like, that's not even part of what you're trying to do with the federal government. That is...
Well, the mystery. I don't think they would be successful if they tried to get
from
it anyway.
Corey and Russell.
Under the primary custody, you know, just typically the jurisdiction, the sovereign that has the primary custody keeps the prisoner. So the state started all this. The state's going to keep defendant Murdoch. So, okay, now we know that the goal has not been to put him in a federal prison. So where are we? We're now where they've got him as a cooperating defendant. Mm-hmm. He, in effect, is what I'm just thinking forward here. Isn't it possible that as a cooperating defendant, he comes in here and says, hey, put me on a polygraph. Russell Lafitte had nothing to do with anything. And if he passes that box or that polygraph, I don't know where that leads with after-discovered evidence with Russell Lafitte. Again, it's just a mystery to me as to why the resources are being used. And it's not as if there aren't other crimes occurring, right, in South Carolina. There's a lot going on, I think, across the country, but certainly here. And so while this is a high-profile case with lots of publicity, and I get that, but
still,
why? It's
still
a mystery.
Well, and Drew, can you take us through like what this plea deal really looked like? What were the brass tacks on this thing?
Sure. So it was pretty straightforward in what you would expect from a plea agreement, in that the defendant agrees to cooperate. Alec has said that he's going to be forthright and truthful, as much as you can take him at his word on that.
Which is not at all.
Yeah. I mean, seriously, we're asking Alec Murdoch to not lie.
Yeah.
And he's cooperating. I mean, again, that's another, I hate to go off on this too much, but it's just a mystery to me. You've got this known sociopath, right? I mean, even the best case scenario, he's stealing all these monies from these innocent citizens around the state. I think he's overwhelming evidence that he committed these double murders, and so you're prosecuting him for these financial crimes, nothing, mm-hmm. Violent, the financial crimes, which I could see if the state weren't doing anything, but they've already made it very clear that they fully intend to lock him up for life with no parole, no chance of parole in the state system. So, maybe it's the forfeiture. That was something I was interested in. You were telling me about.
Yeah.
So what are the plea deal?
So, continuing on with that, that's part of Alec Murdoch's forfeiture, or part of his plea agreement is forfeiture, and forfeiture refers to his assets, his money, and the specific forfeiture order consented to yesterday by Judge Gergel, with the federal judge overseeing all things Murdoch in the federal system. He issued his written order today on that, and pursuant to the indictments from the U.S. Attorney's Office, they've identified, and Murdoch has admitted to, about $9 million in theft, which echoes pretty closely to theft, fraud, money laundering, et cetera. Damages, I guess you could call it. That's more of a civil term, but losses, $9 million in losses attributable to Alec Murdoch. That forfeiture clause in his agreement, to the best of his ability, and that money is available and he has assets to do so, he's going to be required to pay restitution, right? And he has agreed to help the federal government get that money, get whatever assets he has, and turn it over to them so that they can apply it to his restitution and make his victims whole mm-hmm. financially. That is a major fly in the ointment to what's been happening for the last several years in civil court down in Beaufort County with Hampton County with the Mallory Beach case, peripheral to that, the Gloria Satterfield case, the Plyler case, all these civil lawsuits that have come in against Alec Murdoch. There was a receivership order, and you've probably heard this before, but it bears repeating an explanation. Judge Daniel Hall, the circuit judge who presides over the Mallory Beach case in state court, he, upon information from Mark Tinsley, Eric Bland, others, issued a receivership, which is essentially he put in place two court-appointed attorneys to receive all Alec Murdoch's assets, funds, money, and they another way to put it is they froze Alec Murdoch's assets. And they put these two lawyers in charge of it. Go find all his assets, go find all his holdings, his accounts, his money, and whatever he has control over, land, real property, liquid assets, whatever it is, whatever he has control over, whatever's in his name, you take it, you seize it, you put it in escrow, and you don't let a dime go in or out without court approval, because we're going to make sure that the people who have civil lawsuits against Alec are made whole. Those civil lawsuits date, at least in the Beach case, dates back to 2019. There's already been a court-approved settlement in that. Earlier this year, Alec has, if you go back and look at the settlement agreement on that, Alec, all the way back with his wife's estate's settlement. So the Beach case, they sued, and the Beach family, along with the other victims of the boat crash, they all came in together. They made a joint and several lawsuit against Murdoch, Parker's, all the big players in that we've heard so much about. They sued them. They reached an agreement first with the estate of Maggie Murdoch, whose name the Moselle Road property was in, the big nice house, all the land, farming equipment, all that was in Maggie's name. So it belonged to her estate. They had to sue Maggie's estate, get a settlement with the personal representative, John Marvin, Alec's brother. They got all that back in January. The settlement was approved. A clause in that settlement said Alec agrees to waive his right to appeal any further decisions by the court with respect to the receivership. Then fast forward to this summer, we know the global settlement reached with Parker's, Murdoch, all of the. I think it was the insurance company that had Alec's boat insurance policy. All these groups reached this settlement agreement with respect to the Beach case and the other victims in the boat crash. That's all gone through court and approved. And just this week, the receivers, those attorneys, they petitioned Judge Hall, or they proposed an order to Judge Hall to set scheduling for mediation, claims, deadlines, and to get all of that money, all of that liquid asset. It's all gone. It's all, and I spoke to Mark Tinsley about this yesterday. He said it's all of that has been liquidated. It's the money is all accounted for. They've submitted their final. It's $2.1 million is what they were able to come up with, less some attorney fees, some other expenses and things like that. But the net was $2.1 million, and now they have everything out of the way. It's time to distribute it. Then along comes Phil Barber at the very end of yesterday's hearing, and he asked Judge Gergel, will you issue your order of forfeiture immediately?
They want it seized by the Department of Justice immediately.
That should take precedent, I believe, over the state court.
Well, that's what
they
say, and I don't mean to interrupt. They were saying that this has to do with attorney fees, correct? They were saying they don't want hundreds of thousands of dollars, according to the defense team, to be taken out at all for out of these monies. Mark Tinsley says that's not your money. That money is liquidated. That money is.
It's not Alec's money anymore.
It's not Alec's money anymore. So what are they seizing?
Interesting.
It does present quite an interesting dilemma. If you're looking for a dollar figure, let's take a step back. And I asked Jim and Dick this yesterday. Didn't you also try to take attorney fees? Didn't you also take attorney fees out of that money? And yes, they did. When Alec liquidated his 401k before the murder trial, that's where $600,000 in attorney fees came from to pay Jim, Dick, Maggie Fox, Phil Barber, their whole team to represent Alec in that murder case. Then, after the murder case was settled, they went back to the receivers and asked for another 140 or 160 grand for additional attorney fees to litigate the appeal or adjudicate the appeal. And the receivers, the attorneys who are the receivers, they said, no, that wasn't part of our agreement. You're not getting any more money from us. They took it to Judge Hall. Judge Hall agreed with the receivers. And now, in the last few months, there's been two payouts. Now, those receivers who are managing all of Alec's money, those attorneys, they are entitled to legal fees for their work, and they have petitioned the court now on two occasions for money to get paid. And I think the sum total of the two payouts that they've gotten is about 500 grand, about $500,000, just a little bit over. So it was 200 something the first time, then 200 something the next time, and the sum total is about 500 grand that has been approved by the court. Spoke to Mark Tinsley about that as well, and he said at the last most recent hearing they've had about this issue, the receivership attorneys have agreed to take no more than what they've already taken. That's it. They're done. And it just so happens that there might be some sour grapes there with Murdoch's folks. They couldn't get any more money out of it, and yet here are the receivers taking it. So they use that to frame what they did yesterday as bleeding, burning up the money. Yeah. That's what they called it. And they just pointed that jab back at the receivers.
That was that an open court, or was this in?
This was
press conference.
At the press conference.
Yes.
Well, it was in the press conference, but during open court, that's when they did ask.
Right.
The judge.
And the monies that's in there right now, is that net of all attorneys' fees, or just the receivers' attorneys' fees?
I'm not 100% sure on that.
So some of that money could be subject to further attorney's fees before it gets in the hands of victims.
Probably.
Well, and that's what they were saying that they wanted to stop.
They wanted
to stop the bleeding of all the attorney's fees, let the DOJ seize it and move on. But the question is what are they seizing? And another thing that Drew and I talked about earlier today was we're dealing with criminal seizure versus civil.
Well, that's going to be another fight, right? It sounds like in the Murdoch case, another fight over getting the money from state to federal.
What money at this point? Like, that's what I keep on thinking about. Well, it's a couple million dollars, but that money's already been divvied up, hasn't it? I mean,
well, they're asking for the petition, but what's going to happen with this if it's successful? That money just is sent over to the federal government account, right? Not subject to anything, but going directly to the victims in the prosecution that he just pled to in federal court.
Right.
So they diverted all.
It's going to make a lot of people unhappy.
Yeah. So, you know, more to my point, that sort of adds to the confusion as to why you'd want to do this. But, stirring the pot, that's a good word, because the money's being taken from people, and they're probably expecting it like this month, right? Sounds like.
Well, no, not that. Who are you talking about?
The ones in
state
court. You're
saying it was getting divvied up right now?
They would not get this money wouldn't be divvied. According to the proposed scheduling order they put out this week, they would not consider distributing the money until February
of next year.
Yep, February 2020.
Why the long wait?
Because of the number of creditors and claimants against Murdoch who owes money.
Wow.
The anticipation.
Wow. So they all might not get anything from it.
The anticipation also of mediation that's going to happen. They've appointed a special referee. They don't expect this to go easily because there's so many people owed money, entitled to money, and so little money that the receivers have actually been able to recover. And I think that's what might be sort of, this is speculative, and I try not to do this, but I think that might be what's hinted at in the plea agreement for Murdoch is that, hey, I might know where some more money is.
Exactly right.
Because what happened with happened very notably with his 401k initially, due to what I would deem a technicality, the receivers could not access Murdoch's 401k. It was in his name,
right?
But
federal
this was the state. They could
The federal law would protect retirement money, I think, in 401ks from attachment.
From seizure.
Yeah, and so essentially, Murdoch had to agree to give it to them, and that's how they came by it. So it would seem that there might be more accounts like that.
Well, that would be good if they found that. That would be a positive.
Well, I mean, there have been rumors, the rumor mill of Hampton County and Colleton County have been running with where the rest of the Murdoch money is. I mean, it's in our our title of our podcast. So you can't get away from that part of it. But what I thought was interesting yesterday, that I was just surprised that the federal government brought it up. The prosecutors, Ms. Limehouse, said that we're not actually asking for all the money that we think he took. We think he took more like $10.5 million at least. Mm-hmm. The $9 million is just the number that we've sort of settled on. Like, that's the number we're settling on right now. But then she throws this $10.5 million number out.
Right.
And then, to Drew's point, which I think is very interesting, is this whole polygraph. Like, why do we keep on talking about a polygraph? Why do we need to talk about a polygraph when we're talking in the same sentence about Alec Murdoch and telling the truth?
I would love to see how he would do on a polygraph, actually.
Oh, I think he'll do brilliantly.
These polygraphers claim that they can detect
lies. A lie, right?
Yeah, and it'd be very interesting to see how, if they in fact do that.
So back to your point, what if he says, if they actually want to ask the question, so was Russell Lafitte involved? Was Corey Fleming involved? And he says, absolutely not. It was always just me. They knew nothing.
I don't want to get too far down that speculation road, because there was a caveat, a qualifier in the plea agreement with respect to the polygraph. It was regarding the recovery and forfeiture of finances.
Only.
I would need to pull it up and look at that. I think it was that specific. Yes.
Well, maybe they're
on
this.
So does Russell Lafitte know where the money is?
That's right.
Is that how you ask it?
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
But the other thing that struck me is a couple points I want to get off on. One, I'll start with the humorous one. Back when Russell Lafitte was requesting his new trial for after discovered, he made a motion for a new trial based on after discovered evidence of Murdoch's murder trial, swearing that Lafitte had nothing to do with it, and Lafitte's attorneys immediately filed a request for a new trial with Judge Gergel, and the state's or the U.S. Attorney's Office response to that. One of the prosecutors on Emily Limehouse's team is Katie Stoughton, and she wrote, it was one of my favorite things I've read in a filing, all the legal filings I read, going back years on this. But she said, could not think of a less credible person to use as your witness to come make an excuse like this.
That you didn't do it.
Yeah, she could not think of a less credible person than Alec Murdoch.
You can't believe that we're here where we are right now, still talking about this.
Yeah, and not to switch subjects here unless you want to, but we've got the jury stuff going on, right? And at the same...
And we're in the middle of it. We're in the thick of it. I mean, it's Friday. I'm expecting another last-minute Friday something, possibly, because that's what happens to us, it seems like. And, yeah, we've got appeals going... this request, we've got the new response. Did you see the response?
I did. That was very biting, would be the word I'd use.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it was, wasn't it?
A little personal, maybe.
Oh, absolutely. So should we switch gears here and start?
We'll put a button on the federal stuff and what's coming down the road. And that's what I've spent the last, since we got out of court yesterday, I've been trying to figure out what's going to happen next. So, with respect to the forfeiture, right? It would appear, just based on a layman's quick Google search and reading through a few things, I found what is the Department of Justice's asset forfeiture manual that they send out to all their folks, and that's about the only thing I could really definitively find. I don't know if that necessarily applies to this or if it's the right source material, but it's the only thing I could find. Mm-hmm. And in that manual for the federal government, it says that based on a 2017 U.S. Attorney General order and ruling, the federal government doesn't have to do not stop, do not pass. You know, they don't have to really consult with anyone. If there is a forfeiture order and there are seized assets and those assets are tied to a federal crime, if even if the state seizes them first for state crimes, if those crimes are also federal crimes, the federal government can just say, hey, local police department, thanks for the money. And it's theirs. They, if there's a forfeiture order, if there's a seizure order or something like that, they can take it. Where it gets a little murky, in my reading of all those things, we have to remember that the receivership order was not pursuant to crimes. Like they didn't order this. They didn't order the Alex Murdoch's assets to be frozen and put into court control. They didn't order that because of crimes he'd committed. They ordered it because of pending civil litigation where there was abundant evidence, judgments were coming, and he was going to be liable to pay these people damages. Now, there have been some secondary is not the right word, but after the fact lawsuits to come in, say from Eric Bland representing the Satterfield family and the Plyler sisters. Those lawsuits do directly tie to criminal activity. For which he pleaded yesterday. Murdoch pleaded guilty to crimes directly related to the Satterfields and the Plylers. There's this, that it would seem, based on my reading of that, that yeah, technically, it could mess with what they're able to get from Alex on the back end, since the same money and the same lawsuits are all kind of mixed in together. But again, the beaches, there wasn't any crime. I'm not saying that there was no crime that occurred with the boat crash or anything that has gone on with the beach case. I'm saying specific to what happened there with the lawsuit. There was not any theft from the Beach family or anything like that that would preclude. Yeah, that's where it gets kind of murky and what has happened. And, you know, again, as I pointed out, there's already been settlements approved. There's already been, like, where... that money is not free and clear, and to the point that Mark Tinsley has made to me, and when we spoke to him, and of course Mark has not steered us wrong. He's been very forthright with us and very helpful to us. But again, he does represent his clients. He has his take on things, and his take is always going to be most beneficial for his clients. And his take is that this is a nothing. That that money is no longer subject to being forfeited. They're not going to get their hands on it,
Marching the federal government.
We shall say.
Really?
It may well be that Mark is right.
You see this badge?
It's
going to be interesting. This is one match.
Another fight.
And in which court and who's judge?
Right.
So what we got yesterday in the midst of all this, it was foreshadowed during the press conference. Someone asked, when are you going to file your response to the response of the state on the jury tampering charges, the allegations that they have put forth that the Colleton County Clerk of Court, Becky Hill, was what the defense team's trying to say is somehow we're involved with jury tampering on the double murder trial. So now we get from Dick Harpootlian during the press conference, he goes, we got to get to Crime Con. Not kidding. Got to bring that back up.
Got to catch a flight.
We got to catch a flight. I don't know if we're going to have time. You know, when are we going to get this response through? But of course they were taking it seriously. They said they were going to wait until today to do it, but they actually got it out yesterday in the middle of everything. Mm-hmm. The press corps gets another email, another little bombshell just drops off in there in the middle of the day as we're trying to deal with this federal case. And it basically, your take, Charlie, is this, they just were angry that they had to get an affidavit from Alec Murdoch.
That's the way I read it. And
did you agree, though? Did you agree that that was not good case law that they had cited? Why did they need to show? I mean, Alec Murdoch was on television every day. We saw it internationally. Why would we have to say that?
I know. Well, they tried to distinguish the case, and this DeAngelis case, And I do think that the practice is people don't get these affidavits, and so it's sort of lost out there, whether or not that's still good law or not, or whether it could be distinguished. But they did that. But one thing about Alec Murdoch's affidavit, I don't know if you noticed this or not, the Attorney General intimated that this was a recently sort of fabricated claim, basically, the way he sort of phrased it. And so they want to know when Alex Murdoch learned about it. And he didn't answer that. He simply said that he didn't. Mm. He learned about it after the jury verdict, but didn't say when in that period of time. If you read very closely his sworn affidavit.
Is that a problem?
I just thought it sort of begged the question, because they're going to come back, I'm assuming, at some point in arguing this, that if you learned about this that next day or two or three days later and didn't alert anybody where something could be done perhaps more quickly with an investigation, I don't think it's fatal to the defense's claim. If they can belly up, so to speak, and prove that, in fact, these things occurred, I think all bets are off. But I saw a little maneuvering within both of those filings. But yes, you're right. There was an affidavit. They said, not necessary, but by the way, here it is. It just keeps going on, doesn't it?
Well, I know. It absolutely, it obviously, they were like, oh, well, we'll just get this out. Like, right. If this is what they want, then here you go.
Yeah.
We don't think this is necessary. It's terrible case law, but we're gonna take care of it so we can move forward.
And jive against anything, a little bit against the Attorney General personally.
Oh, completely.
Objective investigation by SLED. There were some snide remarks.
Righteous indignation. Yeah. But and then Drew, then you see something filed today.
There was a filing today,
yes,
from the clerk or from the appeals court, and just alerting Mr. Harpootlian that his filing yesterday was deficient, according to like a form, like Rule 204 or some procedural rule that he had he didn't quite get correct when he filed.
Was
it like the wrong, like?
Yeah, he just didn't structure the filing properly, I guess, as far as a motion. For what he wanted, and they just said, before the court can proceed, you need to refile this in the proper format.
Before you get on that plane.
That was just, but after all that, it was the filing, if you haven't seen it or haven't read it, from the appeals court, it was just Dick Harpootlian at his performative best, just the most indignant.
Yeah, I noticed he signed it. I felt like he wrote it.
Yeah, you can tell from the prose in it, the language, the vocabulary.
Mm-hmm. He does not back off.
Dick went just full bore, using his best. Performative, really taking the
preposterous.
Taking the Attorney General's office to the woodshed. Mm-hmm. This is outlandish. This is he called it mulish, which I thought was a fantastic word. Mulish and bad faith. And he said, just raked him over the coals, but at the very end of it, but if you want an affidavit from my client, by God, here it is.
Yeah, we got one for you. Hey, now, there was a clip, we might have to throw it in there, from Dick Harpootlian yesterday as well. I put it into the story that I did, but he was very clear. He said, when he was talking about, one of the questions at the press conference was, how's your client feeling about all of this going on? He goes, Alec will tell you two things. He stole the money, and he did not kill Maggie and Paul. He got in one more time. And then, I think that's going to be their line through the whole thing.
That's actually admissible, potentially, in a criminal case. You've got the lawyer. I don't know. That's why I find, just going back to the reason the federal government's prosecuting, it's the whole line has been, yes, we stole all this money, mm-hmm, no question about it. But when it comes to these state court prosecutions, they're putting the state to the test. And so this whole idea that Alex has taken responsibility, he's remorseful, mm-hmm, I just question the sincerity of all that.
Yeah, he got up there and said, I want to take responsibility. Murdoch did in front of Gergel yesterday. I want my son to see me take responsibility.
Oh, he did himself. And he was under oath, right?
Absolutely. It's my hope that by taking responsibility, people I've hurt can begin to heal.
Okay.
And I mean, we don't have to get into this right now, but the question is who is going to get reimbursed to some degree? And I think that is one real concern. You've got the most vulnerable clients that we've heard about that have been heartbreaking, the Pinckneys, the Satterfields, the Badgers. And we now know that these schemes go back to 2005,
right.
That he was just doing it on his own before he figured out how to put it in a bank or something like that. He would just write it off as a medical lien that he had to take care of or something. But, you know, there are the other victims that have a lot more savvy when it comes to legal power. So you've got law. I saw two law partners there yesterday.
Oh, they were
Ronnie Crosby and Mark Ball were there with their shaking their heads and angry.
Wow. Was there any questions at the press conference as to why he wouldn't plead in state court for these financial crimes?
They did not,
but that's what November 27th is all
right
about.
It's
just confounding the amount of resources that are going into the prosecution of a man who already is serving two life sentences.
Yeah, now, but I do get, I mean, from my perspective, and by the way, I don't think actually Dick's statement would be admissible in a criminal case now that I think about it, but to me, from the state perspective, and of course, under our Constitution, The primary responsibility for law enforcement is the state government. You know, the federal government is supposed to be a limited government, and the state takes care of everything else that the federal government isn't specifically supposed to do. And so when you look at what he did, as more to Creighton Waters' point at the more recent plea for Fleming, all these things are happening in the state court system. The murders, of course, were in the state system. So we're going to take care of these things. And he kept talking about not letting someone go down the street, so to speak, to get a better deal.
Right.
And so I do and I do think that the effort of General Wilson to not only prosecute fully the murder cases, but he mentioned this as being a bit of an insurance policy also. We need to have another life sentence. And we've got this really strict law in South Carolina, three strikes and you're in. For certain crimes, and he's got three of those, the three breach of trust with financial intent, I believe it's over 10,000, they've got three of them, and so he's going to be convicted of those three, and there's going to be an insurance policy, for sure, no parole, life sentence, and a South Carolina prison. So I think that resource is appropriate. I guess I keep going back to this, it's just a mystery to me as to the federal government resource being added on top of this. What would we be? We're up three consecutive life sentences.
Right.
And now we have time, what was it, 30 years or so, potentially?
30 years for four of the counts and 20 years for the rest.
Yeah,
so
they'll do
it
under the guidelines.
18.
There'll be something different than that. But anyhow, and she herself is saying that there's no thought of him serving a day, right, in federal prison?
It's a mystery. Do you think we're going to get an answer to that? Do you think we're going to be able to get to the bottom of this, in other words, of why the federal government keeps on prosecuting?
I think Drew Tripp can.
I've got two things that I want to touch on. First, with responding to a question Ann posed a minute ago, who's going to get the money? Who's going to get if this? It does end up that the federal government seizes the money,
or they find more money,
or that they find more money. But
it
just in terms,
jar.
Just in terms of who, and this was another takeaway from the post hearing press conference. Dick Harpootlian and Jim Griffin were saying that they just want to make sure that the victims have more money, that Alec's victims get more money. That was part of their moral high ground on why they were petitioning for forfeiture to the government so that the attorneys could stop bleeding the assets dry through the receivership. Problem with that, which a few people have pointed out, is that if you go back and you look at Russell Lafitte and you look at Corey Fleming, the restitution they were ordered to pay was not to any individuals, but to organizations. Two organizations, in fact. That would be Palmetto State Bank and Parker Law Group, formerly Peters Murdoch, Parker, Eltzeroth and Dietrich, the law firm of Alec Murdoch. They are getting the restitution from the federal government. In these cases.
Just those two or other ones?
No,
too?
It's them. It's just
those two.
Yes. Because and what ends up being the line of rationale through this. Parker Law Group, when they first learned
I wonder they were there.
First learned of all this, they jumped into action and immediately did the math, figured out how much how much Alex stole. They went to the parties who were owed the money, and they settled. They cut him checks, said, here, Alex stole this. This is money that you were supposed to get. To listen to Mark Tinsley or Justin Bamberg, who represents the Pinckney family, that's not fair. That's not, like, this was, so the you take into account these thefts occurred, these frauds, this embezzlement, this all occurred back in, like, 2012, 2013.
Yeah, there's
you
no
add
money
inflation,
on the table.
You
right.
add an interest, inflation, interest, those two things right. alone, plus the actual, you know, penalty for doing an assessment for actually doing the crime, they're not, their point is that their clients should be getting more than just the right. base,
what
the base amount of money.
What he stole back in 2013 right, right. or
yes.
whatever. Right. Well, and to that point, just to add on, you know, I had been doing interviews with one of his alleged victims, Tommy Moore, and one of the big sticking points was that attorney's fees was still getting pulled out for, you know, from the PMPED law firm.
Yeah, right.
So there's money there that could be still, they could be, I'm not saying that that hasn't been rectified and sorted out now, but those were some of the, that's where the money started to kind of
right.
fall
so
through the cracks.
If the federal government gets this $2 million plus, that money goes to the Parker Law Group and to what other entity?
Potentially, and Palmetto State Bank.
Because
oh, and by the way, Mr. Lafitte was at that hearing yesterday as well. I saw Russell Lafitte's father there.
Because
he was sitting in the corner, right there.
Well, you know, to me, play a little bit of a devil's advocate. You know, and I have respect for Parker Law Group. I have respect for the bank, as far as I know. But they're the ones that put these agents out there, these agents of criminality. I mean, they're you know, it's not as if, I mean, they're controls with, I mean, they're agents of those groups, aren't they? And so for them to then get back the funds, I don't know who's not getting the money from the $2 million, but it just seems to me to have a federal government prosecution
right.
to swoop in and get this $2 million and to divert it back to those two entities.
That could be really, really a sticking point for these civil attorneys, too.
Sore subject.
These
yeah.
are civil attorneys.
Yeah, and there's people, their clients aren't getting money that they thought was coming their way, right?
Yeah, and we could be jumping the gun, I guess, a little bit, because none of this has actually
right.
transpired, we should say. But, I mean, and I don't think this is speculation, though. I think this is good, like, what are the different scenarios that we're looking
right,
at?
Right.
Like, best case, worst case.
Right.
I think that's more where everyone is kind of going, because they're giving it to us to shuffle through. It's
right.
not like they've been clear
right.
on exactly
moving
how this
targets.
Is going down.
Right.
I mean, even talking to the federal prosecutors yesterday after the hearing, well, are you going to seize the money? I mean, that's what we asked. Like,
right.
I literally walked up and said, so is this what you're going to do? And, you know, basically they looked at me and said, well, we don't know.
Wow. Okay.
This is the first time we've heard about it.
And the defense,
like, in this
and
scenario.
The defense handed up the forfeiture order to Judge Gergel at the hearing. The defense did?
Oh.
Or did he have it already, Judge Gergel?
I don't know.
Okay.
Do you know?
What was the question?
The forfeiture order.
Was there a forfeiture order signed by Judge Gergel at the plea hearing?
It was a voice order, and it has since been ordered. It's on Pacer now. It's out there.
A forfeiture
so
order.
Okay.
So if you're the receiver, you can't really distribute the money until that issue's resolved.
Right. Right. So again, delay, trip, roadblock.
Make it harder.
There is a concerted effort here, for better or worse, from Murdoch's attorneys that is evident, to make it as hard as possible on the actors in the state theater of this trial. Whether they are doing their reasons for doing so, if they feel like they are legally. They're legally sound in that, and that they are they're just doing what's right for their client, or whether this is devolved into personal vendetta, and that's between them. But it certainly takes on that appearance.
Well, and it certainly sets the stage. If we do, by some crazy chance, end up back in a, you know, sitting in a double murder trial, boy.
Yes.
Talk about fireworks.
Yeah. The that's a fun thing to think about, maybe not so fun thing to think about going to sit through that again. We are pretty confident that I don't think it would probably not be a 6-week trial again if we did it. I don't think. I think it would be more consolidated than that. But one more thing that I just where my head went while we were talking about this: why is the federal government doing this? Why? And again, to Ann's point, maybe there's more money, and then you have to think maybe what if the government has information that there's a bigger fish or that there are more fish that the state hasn't been able to pursue or isn't able to pursue.
That's fascinating.
And that, again, that is purely speculative. That could end up not being true. I remember we spoke to someone on the prosecution team for the state at one point. There was a lot made when it first became evident that Alec Murdoch was involved with drugs, with a drug trafficking angle through Eddie Smith and the guys from Walterboro. There was a thought that there might be some tie back to a notorious street gang based out of Colleton County called the Cowboys. There was a huge federal indictment and prison sentences for a bunch of those characters back in 2016, 2017, where they cleaned up a lot for racketeering, RICO cases, drugs, money, all kinds of stuff. They cleaned out a lot of those gang members over in Colleton County. And when that name started getting floated out there again, the Cowboys surrounding Alec Murdoch, that was certainly alarming and eye-opening to a lot of people, especially who had heard of that gang and what their track record was before. A lot of shootings, a lot of drive-by shootings, all just very...
Not a good look for the front porch of the local
Yeah,
country.
Not at all. Yeah. As time went on, it's been characterized as a red herring to intimate that the Cowboys were involved in that. In any way or tied to Alec Murdoch in any way. But
we haven't seen the end of this. We have not written the last chapter on this.
To Charlie's point about the devil's advocate, giving the federal government credit and to think that there's more to this that might be up their alley a little bit, and there's a long game here being played. Who knows? Could there be more coming down? And that, I guess that remains to be seen.
I think that's probably a good place to wrap it up today. Yeah. Thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
I appreciate it. Thank you, Drew. Thank you, Sam, for taking care of us today. We will be following this. We expect more developments shortly. Possibly if there is another update.
The Court of Appeals.
The Court of Appeals has to get back to us, right? We need to know whether or not there is enough for them to have an evidentiary hearing. And we don't really even know when that would happen, do we?
No.
So we still have a lot happening in the Murdoch case. So stay with us. Unsolved South Carolina, the Murdoch murders, money, and mystery. We will be keeping you up to date here online at News 4. There's a lot of ways to catch us on our Twitter handles as well. So thank you so much for joining us, and we will probably see you very soon.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.